Hello and welcome to Conversations with Q, hosted by myself, Lucia Fontana Powell. How many times have you finished or not finished reading a blog post and felt like you've heard the same thing again and again? We get it, the more content there is out there, the harder it is to bring something new to the conversation. And at Q, that's what we think's most important, the conversation. So we launched this podcast so that we can sit down and have a proper chat with leading marketers and entrepreneurs in the tech space and beyond to learn about them and from them. Now I'm incredibly excited to introduce our guest in today's episode, as he's kind of a big deal. It's the one and only Sujan Patel, who is arguably the leading expert in digital marketing. Not only is he the co-founder of WebProfit, a growth marketing agency, but he's also a partner in a handful of software companies, including ContentMarketer.io, Narrow, Mailshake, and our very own Q. Between his consulting practice and his software companies, Sujan's goal is to help entrepreneurs and marketers scale their businesses. He's an avid blogger and writes 6 blog posts a week for publications like Forbes, WSJ, Inc., and Entrepreneur Magazine. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode. So hi Sujan, it's great to have you here, especially as you're a partner at Q and you've given us tons of advice and support over the last few years.
Hello.
Just so our listeners can get to know you, where are you based and what's your favourite thing about where you live?
I'm based in Austin, and I would say my favorite thing about the area is just the amount of energy that's in the city.
Yeah, it sounds like such a great place, actually, like massive startup scene, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not as big as like the Bay Area, other places, but I find it's a good balance between everything.
Cool, yeah, and I've heard really, really good things about Austin. So yeah, I'd love to start off by talking a bit about your career. Now, I read that in the space of a few years, you went from college dropout to making over 200K a year as the head of SEO at a company called Oversee. So how did you manage that?
Yeah, I mean, when you put it that way, it sounds awesome. when you're in the weeds of it, you're like, holy crap, how am I going to make a living dropping out of college and whatnot? So I think, part of this was just like, I got in at the right time. In the SEO industry at the right time. It was just kind of blowing up. People were investing in it and they didn't need to be sold. And I was just very, very hungry. So, before dropping out, I was already doing SEO. And I was doing consulting. And then I took a job at an agency and just kind of worked my butt off to get some wins and work. I talked to my boss and I asked him to be my mentor, and he coached me a lot, and I pretty much kept moving up in positions and also moving companies until I got to the kind of the manager level position. That took me about 2 years to get to. Again, I was just really, really hungry, and then I ended up at Oversee, and while my 2 years at Oversee, I ended up, growing out the SEO department, the market, kind of working on the marketing initiatives, and ended up tripling my kind of salary. Well, I'm like 2.5xing it, just by being, really, really aggressive in what we want to do, building out the teams, and then, negotiating, showing like, hey, after a year of working there, I was like, hey, here's what I did. I'm highly underpaid for my position. Let's get me up to market rate. And then I just kept pushing and hitting goals that would allow me to get bonuses to get to that like 200K mark.
Sure thing. Yeah. So you achieved a lot in a small space of time, really, just having a get up and go attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of how you succeed and get ahead in life is just by being hungrier than the people around you.
Sure. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you've always worked in the tech space. When you were younger, did you aspire to work in tech? And what do you find exciting about this industry?
I grew up kind of with a heavy tech influence. My dad was in tech as well. He's like a engineer in the IT space, and so I was always around computers and technology. So I was just always fascinated by it. It was more in the hardware space before the internet existed. What I love about tech is that things just move really, really fast. We're usually at the forefront of what innovation. I wouldn't say invention because lots of what needs everything is pretty much invented these days. It's just kind of making it more usable and applicable to the masses. But yeah, I mean, it's always just good to be in the forefront of what's happening and kind of more cutting edge.
Sure, no, I definitely agree with that. And you mentioned just now that you had a mentor at the beginning of your career. Have you had more than one mentor throughout your life, and has that been quite crucial to your own development, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've always had, I've always had mentors. I think it's I always find people who I can go to for advice. And I have a lot of unofficial mentors. Yeah, people I read about online or like read their content. I ping them. One of the things I do is anytime I read something really, really good, or I learn something from a speaker or for a conference or whatever, I reach out to them later and just thank them and tell them what I did, what they told me, what they said that made an impact, and then how that has helped me. And one of the things that's helped me do is just build a connection and a place I can go back to for a person I can go back to for questions. Over time, that may turn into an unofficial mentor, may turn into official mentor. And so, yeah, I mean, every kind of I have no, when I first started, I had no clue what I was doing. I was just dropping out of school and trying to like make. Not die or like not make kind of make a living. And so these folks kind of just being around them inspired me and they just kind of help with a bit of direction and help me get unstuck and help me kind of refine my where I want to go.
Sure. So, you mentioned that you've got people who are sort of unofficial mentors to you, just people that you admire. If you had to pick three people right now that you really admire, who would they be?
I really like what Heathen Shaw is doing of Kissmetrics or not Kissmetrics, Crazy Egg and a few other companies. He runs Product Habits. I think his fast his experience in product and understanding the customer and the way he thinks is has helped me kind of level up. I would say another person, Richard Branson. Obviously, very much out of reach. Although surprisingly, I've emailed him for advice, and he's emailed me back
Oh,
with some always a one-liner, but always helpful. And it's more encouraging than like demystifying something. It was just like very, very specific encouragement off a question I asked. What I really like about what he's doing is with the Virgin Group, really just conquering. Anything he wants, any industry he wants to go after. He's got a good, he puts a good management team in place. He has a really, he really looks like he knows how to live life too. As an adrenaline junkie myself, really see him as a, the forefront of like business and an adventure, which is awesome. And obviously with Rant Ventures, my SaaS kind of holding company and operation company. We're trying to do this, not the same thing, but like that's definitely helped inspire us to be, that we can run companies, multiple companies, and put a good team in place to operate them.
Sure, no, Richard Branson's amazing. I'm sure a lot of people look up to him.
Yeah, third one, I don't know. I don't really look at people, like I don't really follow people specifically, because everything is always kind of better from a like. Your first question is like, how I went from college dropout to making 200K in like 2 years. That sounds awesome. Except for those 2 years were the hardest things of my life. And so, I don't really look up to people specifically. I look to see like what problems I'm trying to solve and then really, how I can go about solving those problems. And, once maybe there's people who are very knowledgeable in that space or that problem. And, I maybe potentially reach out to them or try to build that. Maybe there's like influencers for that part of my time of the session over something, over a problem. and they kind of move on. So I don't look at people as like I don't really look up to anyone specifically because I want to kind of make my own path. And I don't mean that in a bad way, just like that's kind of what I want to focus on. And I think it's possible.
No, I think that's good advice. And sometimes comparing yourself to other people or just trying to be someone else essentially isn't the route to success. So I've
Absolutely.
also read that you work an 80-hour, 6-day week. Is that true? And how did you work out that that was the most productive way for you to work?
Well, it's definitely not the most productive way to work. It is a way to work. I think the I think the I think the way I kind of was looking at things is at the time I had a full-time job and I was working, pretty much 8 to 5 every day. And I would go home and pretty much do another like two stints. And I know and I say stint, and it was just pretty much based off the laptop battery life. So I would like go work on my couch, and or actually I would go to a coffee shop after dinner, or like eat, dinner at a coffee shop or a place I can work with the full battery, and it would run out, and it lasted about like 3 something hours, and then I would go home and pretty much do the same thing plugged in, and I'd be working like 2 3 hours. And so I kind of just did the math, working like 6 days a week. I'm like, oh wow, I'm working 13-hour days. Now, in terms of productivity, no, it wasn't really the most productive. I don't think it's sustainable. I definitely don't work that hard anymore. I still work 6 days a week, where I work on Sundays in the morning time, just kind of get prepared for the week, do the admin stuff or hyper-focused work. Like when I have a lot, when I'm giving a when I'm preparing a presentation for a talk I'm giving, or I'm writing really like long form content, or anything really that takes up like lots of brain power and I need to have focus is usually kind of the Sunday morning time frame. But yeah, I mean, I like that kind of downtime, but now I'm working probably 40 to 50 hours a week. But it w I wouldn't be where I'm at today if I didn't grind the so 80 hours a week for 2 straight years.
Sure. Well, I love that about your battery life. Like, who needs fancy productivity apps when you've just got your Mac battery telling
Yeah, I think a lot of people overanalyze productivity, but that's also like I'm also, like I'd rather not spend time thinking about like where I spend my time. I'd rather think back of like on my day. I'm like, okay, I had a to-do list, and that list at the morning was prioritized based off of what's going to help me grow this company or move the needle. Did I get it done? And if the answer is no, and it's, every day I'm and the answer is no, then I'm doing something wrong. I need to fix it. Sure, I can use Harvest or I can use apps and figure out like how much time I wasted here and how much time I wasted here. But like, let's just say I know I'm spending time on Facebook, so just stop going on Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't need an app to tell me 3 hours versus 2.5 this week. If I'm spending 2 hours or 3 hours on Facebook, either way, that's a lot of suck of time.
Yeah, definitely. So, you just said that you wouldn't have got where you are today if you hadn't worked that hard early on. What does success actually mean to you?
It's a moving target. So like, if I looked at my goals from like 10 years ago or like when I first started my career, I would have hit success pretty early on. So, I like when I first started, my goal was I need to get to 6 figures. And then I got to six figure salary and I'm like, this is awesome, but it's not as much as I thought it would be. It didn't satisfy me. And I was like, well, what else is the next goal? So it took me a while to figure out the next goal. And it was like, okay, now I want to run my own business. And then when I had my own business, I wanted to like build a big team and get to like a few million dollars in revenue. First it was 1 million, and then it was like 5 million. And so it's a moving target for me. Really now every year, every 6 months, the goal kind of changes. I'm always chasing the next goal. And I think according to books, studies, and pretty much any smart person out there that's done any research, this is a bad way to anchor your life, like to run your life, because it just means you're satisfied only for a brief period of time and then you're forced chasing it. But I really enjoy the struggle, the challenge of going after a goal. Even if the goal is like, I want to get to $100 million in revenue, like, I don't even care what the number is. I don't care what I'm going to do with that money. I don't care that it is a dollar figure. I just care that it's a goal that I have to work really hard and smart to get to. And so I think of it more of a challenge. And so that's kind of how I look at goals is like, I have micro goals, like what I want to achieve in, a quarter, a year, and, 5 years. And then I kind of have like life goals, like what I want to do in life. And so like, I made a list of my three life goals. I want to have, $10 million cash, like in my bank account tomorrow. Or, at the time, I want to climb Mount Everest. And I want to be able to live a balanced life measured by like how much time I'm spending per day with my work and my family. And so like I have like under that goal, I have specific things like should not be at dinner looking at my phone, thinking about work. I should be, hanging out with my family, doing whatever the heck we're doing that day. So there's a couple things. So climbing Everest, I don't know, that goal might change. I probably, I hear a lot of people die doing it, so maybe not ever will happen. But I know if I need to do that, I need to train, I need to like climb a probably a smaller mountain and figure that out. So I don't know, those are my goals right now.
Yeah, well, they're very impressive goals to have. And I agree with you. I think it's it would be a bit of a weird, boring life if you just goal one final destination. And what would you do once you got there? It's been a bit
Yeah,
boring.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I like when I look back at everything I've done and I don't look back and remember the goal I hit. Or the time I hit the goal or how I felt when I hit the goal. I remember the struggle getting to that goal. Like I remember like when at Single Grain, my first agency, we were able to get to about $3 million in annual revenue and about 30, a little under 30 employees. I remember not like us hitting the $3 million goal and going out for a big dinner. I think we did that. And we did it at every $1 million mark. I remember like one day we were on our way there and we were like on the way to the $3 million mark and we had like a huge payroll and operations cost. And like I remember we couldn't make payroll one day and I had to put in $100,000 of my personal money into our business account just to make payroll. And then like I had to like, and so I was like, all that, like, I think it was like that one, I forgot halfway through the year. I was like, every dollar I made this year just literally went back into the company. And I remember these struggles. And I think that like life is more fun when you think about like getting there and the journey than it is the outcome.
Sure. And you mentioned earlier that you like extreme sports, and actually, I think I've seen some photos of you on Instagram doing some crazy things, and you want to climb Everest. So is that a way for you to switch off from working?
It's not a way, so I think it's a really good way to release energy and gain energy. So like I found that like if I skydive or do like ride motorcycles at the racetrack and I go like 150 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour, it like I actually get more energy than I expend because it brings me like I just get fueled with energy. But it's a way for me to kind of unwind as well as recharge. And in my personal life, I like going fast. I like challenges. Those are all things that correlate back to my professional life. Like during work, I really love working on multiple projects. I like challenges, and I want to be constantly challenged. When I go to the racetrack or learn like skydive, when I learn like when I was learning to skydive and like I'm learning new moves and like so it's a way to kind of in real life experience the struggle but in a more rewarding short term and more fun way that happens in the business world or in my business life every day.
Cool. I've never done anything like that, but you're kind of selling it to me. So maybe I'll
There
try
you go.
it one day. So as someone who's part of a small team, I find myself juggling lots of different roles, which is really fun, but sometimes tricky to master. So I'm intrigued to know what this is like for you because you're juggling different roles across multiple companies. So how do you manage that and find time and focus for all of them?
I think the biggest thing is focus on the things that actually move the needle, and have a goal. So, instead of trying to do a lot to get to a goal, I try to think about what is the goal and how do I get there, and like what are the tasks related to it. And so the way I'm able to do a lot of things is one really, really great team. We have a small team, and every one of my companies or everything we work on, we've got no more than like 3 to 5 people working on a single company. But we're able to do a lot with little because we focus really, really specifically on the few things that we can do to actually move the needle. You know, mo all our company's goals are really financial or new customer base or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, what can we do to grow, or how can we grow twice as fast? You know, as a team, we put together all of the ideas, but it's not like we're going to execute on all the ideas. We're going to probably execute on the top 3 to 4. You know, it's just really picking the right things to work on. And I say that means I say no to a lot of things. Like, I'll give you an example. At Mailshake, you know, we get customers asking all the time about an affiliate program or referral program, and we have neither. Because when I did the math of how much impact a referral program or affiliate program would have, it just didn't pan out. It was just not big enough to move the needle. And that means if I were to do it, I would have to have resources and time spent on managing it. And that resources and time spent on managing it could be doing bigger, better things on higher impact. And so I just went through the math. I'm like, okay, oh, I have, let's say I have 14,000 customers. How many of them would, like, in a perfect world, how many of them would participate in the affiliate program? Okay, let's just say 10%, 1,400. And I just continued doing the math. I'm like, if 1,400 people told all their friends and were incentivized, let's just say hypothetical, they had the best incentive ever, how many of their friends would sign up? Okay, let's say that's like 10% of those guys. Now 140, or maybe it's 20%, 280. But even at 280 customers one time at the best possible case scenario, that only really helps me with one, like half a month of my goal, like of my month annual goal. We have a goal of like how many new customers we want to add. So like our goal is, just put it definitively, is like, I want to add 10,000 new customers this year. 280 just gets me 28% of the way there, and that's at the best possible scenario. If I compare that to other channels I can work on, it's kind of that one clearly doesn't win, and so it's just focus on the right things.
Sure, I think that can be challenging for startups because, you hear about so much of what everyone else is doing, which goes back to what we were saying earlier about not comparing yourself. Because I know we've had similar conversations at Q about setting up those kinds of growth tactics.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think one good rule of thumb here for startups is that, or any company, is that when you read about all these things, use that as inspiration, and then try to apply that idea to your own metrics and in your own business, and figure out just on a pen and paper or on a napkin how that will impact you. And a lot of times that idea will go from like, oh my God, that's amazing, to like, I don't know that will be the biggest thing for us. You know, we should stay focused. And so, you know, really we focus a lot on core channels, and trying to do them better and expand them instead of trying to find new channels. So, this is going to be a recurring theme for some time for us, is, you know, small team trying to do a lot with a little, and little being little team and budget. We have to really choose our battles.
Sure. So let's say a startup came to you with kind of resources, like, a small team and not much of a budget. What three things would you advise them to focus on to grow their business?
It really depends on like where they're at. Like, is it like where are they at? You want to add like a hypothetical, like they're at like millionaire, or maybe they're at 10,000 customers, 1,000. Can you give me some
So let's
specifics?
say like a very early stage startup, like let's say Q in the beginning.
Yeah. So, you know, Q in the beginning, what I would say is go find your first 10, 100, or 1,000 customers. Like, don't think about scale. Don't think about ongoing building a team. Think about how the heck you're going to get 100 customers. And when you get to get 100 customers, you have to be really, really scrappy. Okay, and let's say you have 100 customers. And you got to think about how you can get your 1,000, because going from 100 to 1,000 is very, very different than from 1,000 to the next, 5,000 or 10,000. And so what I mean by this is that like every level you hit, like the world, like your things change. To go from 0 to 100, it's all about hustle and hacks and, tenacity. Go from 100 to 1,000 is all about the right tactics and putting together a strategy that you think could work. Going from 1,000 to 10,000 is really all strategy. Like, there's no hack that's going to get you there. A hack might unlock something, but it's never like, it's really about prioritization and process and figuring out what channels you can leverage than it is anything else. So that's my advice, is that really figure out what it is. And I think a lot of early stage founders, I get lots of emails from people, and my whole take is I only answer emails with questions from people that they can't Google themselves. So I think a lot of people just think like they go to the expert, they go to somebody like, hey, help me solve this problem, when what they should be doing is going and Googling things and trying to figure out, make a short list of things they should try. So like a very concrete example is like, hey, I have a high churn rate. How do I solve churn? Well, go read every article there is on churn. Come up with like a list of 5 or 10 ideas. Make a list of all the ideas you think are going to be helpful, and then go talk to the experts and get their opinion on what you should execute on. Because then at least you'll get really good advice from people instead of getting something that's like an article you could have read a long time ago. So again, just really put in that work and do that research. Oftentimes, somebody reads an article, it's like, I want to do that. And that's not how you grow a business.
Sure, and I guess it's tricky because the digital marketing landscape is constantly changing, constantly evolving at such a fast rate. And if you're working in this industry, you do have to keep up and continually adapt and learn new skills. So would you say, like you've just said, often it's best just to go and Google things and read things. Is that how you've continually kept learning in your career? Or maybe are you the type of person who kind of needs to jump in and actually do something in order to learn?
Yeah, so I mean, I always like I spend a lot of time reading and talking to other folks, and so I used to learn a lot from just reading articles and books and whatnot, but I definitely have to learn from actually doing. So I read a bunch of like, what can I actually execute on? I try it, and so I'm a very trial and error type learner. So but I need the knowledge so I know what to try, and I need to try it so I know what works. But nowadays, it's about building kind of like your community. So nowadays I learn a lot from my friends and other marketing people. And instead of reading an article, I learn from the author himself. And so one, I get it way before they write about it. And also I get to have a conversation. Like I just came back from breakfast with the VP of marketing at BigCommerce. So he talked about his growth and what he's doing, how his team looks like, and I shared what I'm doing. And I think I got one or two things. I won't share them exactly, but specifically, but I got a couple nuggets of things I should try. So I'm always kind of connecting with fo more folks, and it's not because I have a brand or I do anything different. It's that the VP of marketing for BigCommerce grew up in Orange County. He moved to Austin recently, and I said hi. I'm from Orange County too. We should chat. So it was like a it's a common interest. I don't think he, I don't think he cares who I am or whatever. So I mean, what I'm saying is that anybody can do it. It doesn't matter where you're from. You just got to find the kind of common interest.
Sure. I think I often find that's the best way to learn too, and I really love Slack groups for that, just talking to people, and as you said, you get wind of all of their content before they even publish it. But do you have any favorite sources for content, like any blogs or sites that you really like?
To be honest, I usually just go to Growth Hackers, and I just follow the links. Like, I just read a ton of stuff, and every time I read an article, I find another site I should be reading, and I check that out. And I just kind of keep following the links. And now I have all these articles in Pocket that I add to my favorites and kind of read at a later time. So yeah, I mean that's kind of really where I learned from.
Sure. And you write for yourself on a very regular basis. So you're writing for major publications like Forbes and Inc. and Entrepreneur Magazine. How do you continually come up with new ideas on such a regular basis? And how often do you think businesses and brands should be publishing new content?
I think, I think the quality has and the amount of content has increased drastically over the last 5 years. I think people should be publishing a lot less and focusing on great content, creating what would be a considered an amazing piece of content, not just in volume. Those who are publishing regularly, or I guess more frequent content should be focused on engaging the audience rather than growing. Yeah, so I think just focusing on great quality of content, and that means anything better than what's out there now. And then you figure out how you can do that at a regular cadence, whether it's weekly, monthly, biweekly, whatever. I think in terms of how I come up with ideas, I talk to other individuals. I look on Quora, I look on BuzzSumo to see what's popular. I look on what people are searching for. I look at our help support docs. Support questions, and I just kind of look for keywords, what people are asking about, and I'm always kind of keeping a pulse on my customer. I usually engage with at least 5 or 10 customers a week, just through email and sometimes through phone or Slack or whatnot, and it kind of gives me a pulse of like what they're looking for, so I just know what's happening, and I always cross-reference that with like what would be a good article, and so I always have a list of things that are like. I want to write about that that help me kind of seed the content.
And obviously, video and audio content are really big right now. And I know that you're really good at creating video on a regular basis. But I read that you used to have a fear of public speaking. And now, yeah, obviously, you do videos and you speak at major international conferences, and you seem really comfortable doing that from the outside. So, how did you overcome that? And what advice would you give someone who's nervous about creating video, because I think it's quite a big challenge for a lot of marketers who maybe were writers initially and now they're moving into this new space.
I think it's just practice. It's really just kind of coming down to practice. If you're a writer, take the content you've written and try to make that into a script. Read it. I really suck at like script reading. I suck at reading in general, like out loud. And so I just make an outline of the things I want. Like I have a topic, I make an outline, kind of like I'm writing an article, and I just go on a video and rant about it. My first hundreds of videos were really bad. In fact, it, to record like 5, 6 videos, now it takes me an hour. It used to take me half a day to create the same amount of content I create in an hour today. So it's just practice. I think really comes down to that. In terms of public speaking, lots of different. It's really hard to answer that because I don't know what like people have like different fear and whatever. I just kind of sucked at like. Getting in front of like I would really be good in front of a group, small group of people, but when I got on stage or whatever, I just suck at like explaining things. So or and I just was scared to death of like what people are commanding the room. And so part of it came from practice. You can do something like Toastmasters, which is really awesome to kind of really help you get your thoughts out there. I think if anybody has a fear of public speaking, I think Toastmasters is probably the best place to learn. And that just helps you public speak, but like become better at communicating. But yeah, it's just, I think it's just hours on the job and doing it.
Cool. That's reassuring to know, actually, because I've definitely experimented with video a bit and it just takes me ages, but I can see how it gets easier for sure.
Yeah, it
So,
gets easier with time.
yeah, exactly. So, obviously, you've been giving loads of good marketing advice and life advice in general in this podcast, but have you heard any marketing advice recently that you thought was really bad, or do you have any pet peeves at the moment to do with marketing?
My pet peeves are just people going after tactics or like looking for a growth hack and or like looking for a thing, a silver bullet. There is none. If there was a silver bullet, people have already used it, abused it, and it would no longer work. So, Yeah, there's no like magic. I think you kind of have to figure out what the you have to do the hard work. And people always read. My biggest pet peeve is marketers read something and they take it for face value. No, you have to use that for inspiration. And it's always frustrating. Like, well, if I just repeat the growth that Airbnb had through or Dropbox, I'm like, yes, but that's a 10-year-old example, and you know, very specific to their use case. And so, you know, it's you have to go deeper than the face value what you read.
And on the flip side, are there any marketing trends that you're really excited about now and that you think you would advise businesses to jump on?
Yeah, I'm most excited about conversational marketing, leveraging live chat, chatbots, and really instead of going after like going and filling out long lead forms and whatnot, actually getting that information by talking to your customers through live chat or you know a chatbot and get that. So it's really interesting. I urge any B2B or even e-commerce company to test that. I can't say it always worked, but every test I've run, it's definitely worked well.
Now, if you're a marketer or business owner in the B2B space and you're not already following Sujan, well, you might just be living under a rock. But just in case, here are the best places to find him.
I'm probably most active on LinkedIn or Twitter. It's just find me. Twitter is at Sujan Patel, and LinkedIn is just search Sujan Patel. And yeah, I mean, I write a lot about marketing, growth, entrepreneurship at my blog, sujanpatel.com.
Thank you for listening to our third episode of Conversations with Q, with very special guest Sujan Patel. I personally found it fascinating to talk to such a highly motivated and successful individual, as well as hearing his perspective on business growth and marketing, so I hope you did too. If you'd like to have a chat with us about anything we discussed in this episode, feel free to tweet us at Q_co or call into our Anchor FM station, QCast. We'd also love it if you could give us some stars on iTunes so that more people can find out about us.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.